Chapter 7. A Force of Nature. Lettice Earwig was not someone who would take being balked lying down, or standing up, come to that. In truth, she was a force of nature, and she hated to back down on anything. It hadn't taken her long to hear that there had been a queue one day outside Nanny Ogg's home. Tiffany Aching, Mrs. Earwig decided, was not coping, and it needed a witch of senior stature to do something about it. In Lettice Earwig's opinion, never a small thing, she was in fact the only witch who had the stature to act, especially as that old baggage Nanny Ogg wouldn't do a thing. Mrs. Earwig had married an elderly retired wizard many years before. "Wizards ain't allowed to get married," Nanny Ogg had told Tiffany scornfully. "But the silly man got what was coming to him. Talk about henpecked, he was earwig-pecked. She got through all his money, so they says." Tiffany wisely didn't rise to that. It was quite probable that they were actually Nanny Ogg, who hated Mrs. Earwig with an unrelenting determination. But that was why she was relieved when Nanny Ogg wasn't there when Mrs. Earwig arrived at Granny's cottage one morning a week or so later, for what she called one of her little chats. It would have been better, on reflection, if Mrs. Earwig hadn't found Tiffany out in the garden up to her elbows in suds in the middle of doing some washing for old Mr. Price. Tiffany's heart sank when she saw the woman coming, and heard her, for Mrs. Earwig's copious amount of jewellery announced the witch with such a cheerful jangle that it was as if it had ambitions to move from being a set of charms and amulets to being a full instrumental fanfare. But she wiped her hands on a towel and welcomed her visitor into the cottage with as much politeness as she could muster. Mrs. Earwig had a tendency to treat Tiffany like a child, and also she had bad manners, such as sitting down without being asked. Mrs. Earwig did, indeed, sit down in Granny's old rocking chair, and she gave Tiffany a smile of blatant insincerity, then made it worse by saying, "My dear girl." "Woman," said Tiffany quietly, as Mrs. Earwig looked up and down. She was acutely conscious of the suds still clinging to her apron and her dishevelled hair. "Well, never mind," said Mrs. Earwig, as if it didn't matter. "Now, I thought I should come as a friend, and as one of the oldest witches in this area, to see how things were going, and to offer some constructive advice." She looked around the kitchen with a superior air, with a particularly sharp glare at the dust that was happily playing little games with itself over the stone flagstones, and Tiffany was suddenly very aware of the spiders which had remained in residence in the scullery, with lots of little ones adding to the colony. She hadn't the heart to move them. "Don't you think you are overstretched trying to look after two steadings, my dear?" Mrs. Earwig added, with a saccharine smile. "Yes, my dear Mrs. Earwig," Tiffany said back rather sharply. "I am stretched, because there is a lot to do in both places and not much time." "Which you are taking up," she thought, "but two can play at your game. If you have some advice," she added, with a smile to match Mrs. Earwig's, "I'll be glad to hear it." Mrs. Earwig was never one to ignore an invitation. Not that she had needed one, anyway, since she immediately launched into a prepared speech. "I'm not saying you are a bad person, my dear. It's just that you can't cope, and people are talking about it." "Perhaps they do," said Tiffany, "and often they thank me. But I am just one woman, that is, woman, not girl, so I can't do everything at once. It's just a shame that there aren't more elder witches around." Her voice trailed off, the memory of Granny Weatherwax lying in her willow casket still too fresh in her mind.
"I understand," said Mrs. Earwig. "It isn't your fault."
Now her voice was silky smooth, but just a shade beyond patronising and moving towards out-and-out rudeness.
"You have indeed been flung into areas you can't manage, and you are in fact far too young, dear Tiffany, to take the right steps on the path of magic. You surely need the counsel of an elder witch." She sniffed. "A serious elder witch with the right approach, no family ties."
And it was clear that she did not consider Nanny Ogg to be a candidate for this task. Tiffany bridled. If there was one thing she hated more than "my dear girl," it was "dear Tiffany," and she well remembered the counsel Mrs. Earwig had given to her protege, Anagramma Hawkin, who had taken over a witch's cottage, knowing everything possible about runes and tinkly spells, but nothing at all useful. She had needed Tiffany's help. As for implying that Nanny Ogg would not be a good mentor,
"Well, May, dear," Mrs. Earwig continued, "as one of the most senior witches in this area, I therefore feel I should take the place of Granny Weatherwax. It's the way it has always been done, and for a good reason. People need a senior witch to be a person whom they can respect, someone they can look up to. After all, my dear girl, a witch of high standing would never be seen doing the washing." "Really?" said Tiffany, gritting her teeth. A second, "my dear girl." One more, and she would want not only to thrust Mrs. Earwig into the suds, but also to hold her head under for quite some time. "Granny Weatherwax always said, 'You do the good that is in front of you, and I don't care who sees me doing an old man's washing. There's lots to do, and a lot of it is dirty, Mrs. Earwig.'" Mrs. Earwig flamed at that and said, "Our widge, my dear girl." "Not my dear girl," Tiffany snapped. "Mrs. Earwig," not a trace of our widge, "your last book was called To Ride a Golden Broomstick. Can you tell me, Mrs. Earwig, how does it fly? Gold is rather heavy. You might say, in fact, that it is extremely heavy." Mrs. Earwig growled. Tiffany had never heard her growl before, but this one was a heavy-duty growl. "It's a metaphor," she said sharply. "Really," said Tiffany. Now she was angry. "What's it a metaphor for, Mrs. Earwig? I'm on the sharp end of witchcraft, which means doing what should be done as best you can. It's all about the people, Mrs. Earwig, not about the books. Have you ever gone round the houses, Mrs. Earwig? Helped a kid with his arse halfway out of his trousers? Do you even see the little children with no shoes? The cupboards with no food in them? The wives with a baby every year and a man down the pub? You have been kind enough to offer some advice. If I may offer you some advice in return, you will impress me if you too go round the houses, and not before. I am the acknowledged successor of Granny Weatherwax, who was brought up as a witch by Nanny Gripes, who learned it from witches going all the way back to Black Alice, and that doesn't change whatever you might think." She stood up and opened the front door. "Thank you for taking the time to come and see me. Now, as you have pointed out, I have lots to do, in my own way. And clearly you haven't." One thing about Mrs. Earwig, Tiffany thought, was that she could flounce. She flounced so much that it almost hurt. Things jingled a merry farewell around her, and one charm even made a spirited attempt to stay by hooking itself around the doorknob as Mrs. Earwig turned the threshold. The last thing she said to Tiffany, as she untangled the little pendant, was, "A trade. A really trade. I invited you to take advantage of all I know about witchcraft, but no. You flung my goodwill right back in my face. You know, we could really have been friends if you weren't so stubborn. Farewell, my dear girl." Having got the last word in, Mrs. Earwig slammed the door behind her as she left. Tiffany looked at it and said to herself, "I do what is needful, Mrs. Earwig, not what I want to do." But the banging of the door as punctuation caused Tiffany to think, and she thought suddenly, "I want to do it my way, not how the other witches think it should be done. I can't be Granny Weatherwax for them. I can only be me. Tiffany aching." But she realised something else, too. "Mrs. Earwig was right about at least one thing," she said aloud. "I am trying to do too much. And if Jeannie is right, and there is something awful coming," she shuddered, "which I will have to deal with, but I really hope Miss Tick can find me a girl who might be some use. I do need some help." "Aye, would seem so," said the voice of Rob Anybody. Tiffany almost exploded. "Are you always looking after me, Rob Anybody?" "Och, aye. Remember, there's a geese upon us to look after ye day and nicht, and it's a great geese." A geese. Backed up by tradition and magic, Tiffany knew that a geese was an obligation no feagle would ever fail to meet. Except Daft Woolly, of course, who often mixed up his geese with a flock of big butties. She understood all this, but it still rankled. "You watch me all the time, even when I'm bathing," she said wearily. It was a familiar argument. Tiffany, for no reason Rob could understand, seemed to take exception to the feagles being around her everywhere. They had already come to an agreement about the privy. Though a feagle will cheerfully lie about almost anything, so Tiffany still went into any privy with her eyes peeled for flashes of feagle. She had even once had a nightmare about a feagle popping up out of the other hole of her parents' two-holer.
"Okay, that we do. Not looking, you can."
"Well," said Tiffany, "could you do me a favour?"
"Okay," said Rob. Would you like young earwig wifey dropped in a pond or something?
Tiffany sighed.
Alas, no, I'm not that kind of person.
Ah, but we is, said Rob Anybody cheerfully. Anyway, it's traditional, you ken, and we are good at tradition, being as we are part of folklore, he smiled hopefully.
A very nice thought, said Tiffany, but no, once again, no. Mrs. Earwig is not really a bad soul.
That is true, she thought. Stupid, sometimes overbearing, unfeeling, and not really, if you get down to it, a very good witch. But there is a steel there at the core.
Tiffany knew Nanny Ogg rarely did any washing. What were daughters-in-law for? But she realised suddenly that she had never seen Granny Weatherwax doing any laundry for the old gentleman either. And that thought stopped her for a moment. I need time to work this out, she thought, looking at the big man of the Knack-Knack Feagles standing in front of her, ready for anything. This would be a tough task for them, she knew.
I've a wee geese to lay on you, she said.
Ook aye.
Rob, have you heard of washing clothes?
Ook aye, we ken it happens, said Rob Anybody.
He scratched at his spog, and a mixture of dead insects, half-gnawed chicken-foot bones and the like showered out.
Well then, said Tiffany, I would deem it a favour if you could spend some time in my scullery whilst I am about my business. You would be helping an old man, indeed you would. He likes to be clean and to have clean clothes.
She glared down at him. A circumstance, Rob, which would be well considered by yourself. She approached the scullery door in trepidation when she got back from her visits. Everything was shining clean, and draped among the trees outside were old Mr. Price's unmentionables, as white could be. Only then did Tiffany draw breath.
Excellent, she said to Rob Anybody.
He smiled and said,
Aye, we ken this would be a tricky job.
Good job I was with you this time, came a voice.
It was wee Mad Arthur, a feagle who didn't mind washing, due to his having been raised by a bunch of cobblers and then being a policeman in the big city. Wee Mad Arthur, Tiffany often thought, had a battle raging inside him between his feagle half and the city half. But since every feagle liked a good punch-up, well, a fight inside yourself was just an extra treat.
Big Yan pushed Wee Mad Arthur aside and said, We dinna mind helping old big jobs getting them squeaky clean, but we are the feagles and we treasure our dirt. Washing makes a feagle wither awa. We canna abide the soap, you ken.
Nay me, Rob, nay me,
came a happy voice, and Daft Woolly fell off the wall of the old goat paddock. Bubbles floated away on the air as he rolled across the grass.
I've told you about that, Woolly, Rob snapped. It just makes bubbles come out of your ears.
Tiffany laughed. Well, you could make your own soap, Woolly. Make some for Jeannie. Take a wee present home to your kelder. It's easy to make. You just need some fat and some lye.
Oh, aye, we're good liars, we are, Rob put in proudly. Famed for it, you ken.
Well, I tried, thought Tiffany. And anyway, their spirits are pure, if not particularly clean. Down on the chalk, at the edge of a dark forest, on the top of a hill overlooking Two Shirts, a small town with growing aspirations of being a bit more than one store, a coaching inn and a blacksmith's shop, the Queen of the Elves smiled in satisfaction. It was a warm night, and the air smelled as it always did, and the sky looked as it always did. There appeared to be a new road or stream into the town which glimmered in the moonlight, but otherwise things seemed just as they had been on her last visit. She turned to look at her goblin prisoner, who was perched with his hands bound on the saddle behind one of her guards. She smiled, and it was not a pleasant smile. She would hand him over to Lord Lankin, she thought. The elf would enjoy tearing the wretched goblin limb from limb, after he had had his pleasure playing with his prey, of course. But first, this goblin filth had led them here, to this hillside. The Queen and her raiding party looked down at the sleeping valley ahead. Her warriors wore scraps of fur and leather, feathers tucked into headbands and dangling around their necks, and they carried bows with the arrows already nocked. The gate between the worlds had given them very little trouble in the end. It had not taken much effort for the stronger elves to push through. The barrier was, indeed, very weak just now. Before, the old witch would surely have kept it strong, kept them out, for she had always been on the watch for the fairy folk. Animals noticed them too. At the very moment the Queen stepped onto the chalk, the hares on the downs had turned and frozen, whilst the owls out hunting had soared higher, sensing the unwelcome presence of another predator. Humans, however, were usually the last to notice anything. which made them so much more fun. Apart from a glow above a mound on the hillside and a distant noise of roistering that the Queen recognised as being the usual sounds of the Nacmac Feagle, there had been nothing so far to trouble the first elf incursion into the Discworld for many years, and the elves had begun to enjoy themselves. They had caroused through a couple of villages, letting out cows, upturning carts, turning the milk in the churn sour, spoiling a cask of ale, and generally amusing themselves with such trifles. But the growing little town below promised all sorts of entertainment for elves who had been denied the pleasures of a raid for far too long. Apart from the delicate tinkling of myriad bells attached to the harnesses of the raiding party's black horses, there was silence as the elves waited for their queen to give the signal. She raised her arm. But before she could do anything, suddenly, screaming through the air, there came a noise as though someone was killing a gigantic pig. It was a sound which enveloped the whole of the chalk, a screaming whistle which screeched around the hills, setting everyone's teeth on edge. Down in the valley, the air now seemed to be full of fire as a huge iron monster tore along the silvery trail towards the town, clouds of steam marking its path. The elves reeled, panic spreading rapidly from elf to elf as they shrank from the noise, from the sound, from the very scent of iron in the air. Nonchalantly, Ulf the Lathe the Swarf jumped down from the saddle, used his teeth to steal a stone knife from the guard, whose hands were now covering his pointy ears in an effort to block out the sound, and swiftly sliced through his bonds.
"Told you! Iron horse, that is," he said importantly. "Last train into two shirts, is that? That's where goblins work, with steel and iron!"
The Queen hadn't flinched. She knew that. Some of the others had, but she could deal with them later. No elf should show fear in front of his queen. But in her mind she thought, "Train? It's big. It's iron, and we don't know about it. And what we don't know about it could get us killed.
How can we tame it?" she demanded. "More importantly, can we make it ours? What grief we could make with something like that!"
Peas Blossom, a calm Peas Blossom, seemingly impervious to the general sense of terror among the elves, was at her elbow and smiled, a smile the Queen didn't like. It cut through the dramatic style of the face he had chosen to wear, his eyes cold and merciless. He said, "We can torment the goblins until they tell us how to control it. Then they can do it for us."
"They won't," said Ulf the Lathe the Swarf, giving Peas Blossom a dirty look. "Why should they?"
Peas Blossom reached down to grab the goblin, and Ulf the Lathe the Swarf reacted quickly, thrusting his small hands into his pockets and throwing a shower of silvery scraps over the elf. Peas Blossom screamed in pain as he fell from his horse. The goblin laughed as the other elves hastily backed away.
"Forgot what's in my pockets, Mr. Pea-Pea Flower. Told you about Swarf, I did. Part of my name. Hurts, does it? Touch clever goblin these days, nasty things happens. Especially to elves."
He pointed down at Peas Blossom, whose glamour had completely deserted him under the onslaught of the shower of iron filings. The elf lay writhing on the grass, a small, weak, pathetic creature crying from the pain.
"Funny, no?" said the goblin. "In this new world, little things like Swarf and goblins do matter."